podcast on ESPNCoastal.com.
Welcome back to Three and Out here on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. Kevin Thomas, BJ Bennett, Ben Troop, glad you're with us here on this Tuesday, all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. Auburn, big win over Ole Miss over the weekend, and joining us here, member of the 2010 National Championship team, linebacker there at Auburn University, Jake Holland joins us here on Three and Out. Jake, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, you doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, we appreciate you coming on, and certainly Auburn has had some of the more controversial games all season long, but at the end of the day, they figure out a way to get the dub. Have you ever been a part of a team like that where it's you just find a way to get a win at the end of the day?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it reminds me of the 2010 season as well as 2013 season, where, you know, it was two very successful seasons that we both went to the national championship, and each week in and week out, we find a way to win.
I was going to say, Auburn, going back to your career the last couple of years, seems to just have a comfortability in the moment. And a lot of people will say, well, the Tigers get lucky. Maybe, but I think also Auburn's putting itself in position to get lucky. How do you explain that as a playmaker, that when times get tough, when the game's on the line, more times than not, like Kevin said, Auburn just finds a way?
That's right. I mean, look, it all goes back to preparation each week. I mean, each player has their job. They have their job they need to execute. And when you do that as a collective unit, things seem to work out for you.
And, Jake, obviously, you play, you know, won a national championship your freshman year. Then you got to play in another national championship. Your senior year, you had two different dynamics. You had to deal with, you know, you had Cam and that big-time personality and a guy, Nick Marshall. I mean, what was it like, you know, going on, you know, winning one, not winning the other one, but having two different quarterbacks, two totally different styles?
Well, I mean, I tell you, those two athletes right there, just once in a lifetime opportunities for me to have an opportunity to have two players like that on my team. I mean, they really were playmakers, and they got the job done each week in, week out. And as a defensive player, you got to appreciate that because they keep you off the field and allow you to be fresh and continue to play throughout the season.
Jake Holland joining us here on a Three and Out. Jake, you look at college football offenses over the last 8 to 10 years and how they've evolved. Defense at times doesn't seem like it'd be a whole lot of fun, where a good effort might be a 24-point ball game by the defense.
You know, the game evolves every year, and you have to be able to adjust with that. If that means there's more snaps, you got to have the depth, and you got to be able to rotate in and out. And I played on some teams where I played 80, 90 snaps a game, and I can tell you that's hard to last throughout the season. But I think as the game evolves, if you want to be successful as a team, you got to evolve with it.
What was it like playing for Gus Malzahn there at Auburn?
Well, you know, Gus is an offensive-minded coach, so obviously I had the highest respect for Gus, and I really like him as a person and as a coach. And I think he's a great leader. He gets the job done when it needs to be done. And you know, this year we've had a rocky start, I'll be totally honest. But we're improving each week. I see some really good improvement in the offense as well as defense. We've got to execute though. We've got to execute the plan each week, and it seems like we did that last week. South Carolina, obviously a loss, didn't get that win. Georgia, obviously a loss, but hopefully we can move forward with this Ole Miss win and into the LSU this week. And obviously we know that LSU's had some questionable win or questionable losses this year, and hopefully we can Auburn can play on that and pull out a win this week.
And, Jake, I mean, people talk about rivalries. I don't think it gets bigger than the Iron Bowl. I mean, you played in four of them. I mean, just describe that atmosphere.
Well, as a player, it's almost impossible to describe. What I can tell you is almost the attitude changes amongst the team, especially for Alabama native growing up as a young, you know, youth league football player, and just hearing about the rivalry and growing up in the rivalry, you almost have to take your team in and say, hey, look, for you guys that didn't grow up in the state of Alabama, this is what this is. It's time to, you know, to focus in and really, you know, tone it up. I mean, this is the biggest game in college football, in my opinion, and I think you really have to kind of explain that to the team and just try to do your best.
As you said, grew up in Alabama. Hearing about that, were you an Auburn fan going into Auburn? Did you become Auburn? Talk a little bit about how growing up in that state, you picked a side.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my family was on the other side, the Alabama side, just growing up in the state. But, you know, being a sports fan in general, I really wasn't a fan of either team growing up. But, like I said, a lot of Alabama side, a lot of Auburn side. But Auburn was the best fit for me as far as the scheme and the system, as well as the school. So going back, I wouldn't change anything.
Obviously, SEC teams right now playing a full SEC schedule, and maybe seeing a couple of teams out there that aren't accustomed to having, you know, one or two losses already this early in the season. Obviously, the circumstances are different here with, you know, what college football's had to deal with. But how challenging do you think it would have been to play an SEC-only schedule, given how difficult playing in the SEC any year already is?
Well, the SEC schedule, in a regular year, I mean, my goodness, guys, it's like I said, it's a challenge every week, not only mentally but physically as well. It's a very physical game in the SEC, and you know, other divisions they really don't have that. It's really unique to the SEC, and to add even more SEC games to the season, that just creates a much longer season, and you know. It takes a toll on your players. It goes back to, you got to have the depth. You got to be able to have that longevity throughout the season to be able to last. But yeah, I mean, you're going to have injuries with adding more physicality to the game.
Bo Nix was obviously a guy that had an incredible freshman year. I mean, I know he probably got a lot more on his plate this year. When you look at, as we mentioned, an all SEC schedule, what have you seen from him his second year? And do you think he'd be pressing sometimes to kind of make every play on offense?
Look, I think Bo's a great competitor. I think he's grown a lot from last year. You know, he's got to continue to grow. He's got to continue to execute. And sometimes trust his O-line, trust his teammates around him. I can see at times he does get a little bit jittery there back in the pocket. If he could just, you know, sit in the pocket a little bit longer and execute the play. But again, I see a lot of improvement on his end. And I truly believe that he's going to be a really, really special player for Auburn in the future.
Auburn has LSU, the defending national champs, coming up on Halloween night. I know at Auburn it's all about Alabama, but what are some of those battles with LSU like, and how extra special is this one going to be given that they're the defending champs?
Look, LSU-Auburn game is always special. It's always a hard-fought game. I remember – you know, in my playing days, the next day was always one of those days where you're like, all right, I got to get in the weight room and I got to roll, you know, I got to work these muscles out because I am sore. So it's definitely a physical game, but definitely also a special game and a big one for both teams. You know, both teams are kind of similar in record this year, and it'd be a big win for either team. So, but obviously I'm rooting for the Auburn side and I hope they can pull this one out.
Jake Holland, former Auburn linebacker, our guest here on the 3-and-out. Jake, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, guys. War Eagle.
Appreciate it. Part of the 2010 National Championship team there at Auburn. As you said, hey, some of those teams he was a part of kind of just found a way to win. And at the end of the day, BJ, I always hate when the leagues come out retroactively. I mean, it's good for us fans to hear it, but leagues come out and say, hey, we made a mistake. Well, that's not changing the result of the game. And Auburn, again, has found a way through controversy or not to win more games than they've lost. Really only got manhandled by Georgia, and here they are. What can you kind of say about that Auburn team right now, who doesn't look all that great, but – still winning ball games.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, you know, I don't want to overlook the blown calls, because all of us have had, with our favorite teams, you know, calls where you're sitting here, especially if they directly impact the game, going, how is this possible? And you admitting that you made a mistake, or, you know, maybe there being more clarity in the media afterwards about why the call was wrong. That doesn't make me feel any better. But Jake was probably laughing under his breath when we're asking him, hey, man, have you ever seen anything like just crazy games week to week? He was a part of the Ricardo Lewis play with Josh Harvey Clemens. He was a part of the kick six. So he's been a part of some games that are among the more kind of iconic, unpredictable games in college football history. But I'll keep saying this, and I don't know how to explain it, but it's Auburn. And Auburn is such a hard team to get a feel for, because when you think they're going to be awesome, sometimes they disappoint. When you think they're going to be rebuilding, sometimes they're great. I mean, for folks talking about Nick Marshall, and Nick was great at Auburn. I mean, what a fit. And they had a second-half lead against Florida State in that national title game. But Nick Marshall went to Georgia as a defensive back. You know, he wasn't like Cam Newton as a you know, bona fide, this is going to be our superstar type guy. Auburn finds ways to – you know, have guys that maybe aren't always super heralded become key players. They have, you know, a history of special teams plays, the kick six, been out of the block that you were a part of. It's Auburn. Auburn football is crazy. I mean, whether it's their coach, whether it's the way their games end, whether it's always comparing themselves to Alabama, it's just Auburn, man.
And the whole thing about it is, I mean, this Auburn team is still trying to find their stride. I do agree, Kevin, when you say, I mean, it's not pretty at all. They finding a way. I mean, you know, those Zebras out there definitely helping them, you know, against Arkansas and, you know, this past weekend. But the thing about this is, you know, I think Jake even said a little bit, you know, you got a guy like Bo Nix who be pressing. If you haven't seen Seth Williams play football, he made a catch on the sideline that the DB – didn't even know he caught it, and he scored on it. I'm looking like, well, he caught that? Sometimes, sometimes you don't got to overthink this thing, but it is Auburn. They can win ugly. You know, they can go out there and make it a scrappy type game. But we're going to learn a lot about Auburn this week, because, one, Auburn is a team that could definitely have one win, and LSU was still trying to find their stride. Going to learn a lot about both teams on Saturday.
And think about this as it pertains to Auburn, okay? Auburn's greatest player in school history, if you don't want to say Cam, Bo Jackson, he might be more well-known for being a baseball player to some, okay? Their 2010 quarterback that took them to the national championship game, he started out at Florida. Their 2013 quarterback who took them to the national championship game, he started out at Georgia. Their greatest coach ever played at Georgia. You're talking about a team where their greatest coach in modern history might be a U.S. senator. Like, everything about Auburn is just strange. It's Auburn. They're quirky. They're weird. But they're a part of college football, and they're fun week to week.
The quirkiest thing about Auburn is the fact they're the Auburn Tigers, and every time an Auburn guy come on, they scream a war eagle. I'm as confused.
I mean, that's true, too. Yeah.
I'm just saying. I mean, what is it? War eagle, Tigers, whatever. That it's Auburn. I mean, hey, man. I mean, listen, when you got to share the same state with Auburn, be the best college football team in the country, you know, whatever I got to do to win, take it. Because Bo Nix right now is 1-0 in the Iron Bowl. We'll see if he can make it 2-0 this year.
We've got more to come here on 3 and Out all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. We'll hear from E.J. Jr., former Alabama linebacker, going to the College Football Hall of Fame. We'll get his thoughts certainly on Alabama, who just keeps rolling right along here in 2020. He'll join us coming up the final hour of the show. But something a little different for college football this weekend, or coming weekends, I should say. We'll tell you what that is next. It's 3 and Out on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network.
ESPNCoastal.com.
All the music on today's podcast is produced by Curriculum Global. If you want to check out more of the music, follow them on Instagram. That's Q-U-R-R-I-C-U-L-U-M Global on Instagram. Curriculum is a record label based out of Atlanta that supports and funds students to help them pursue a career in music. We're really excited to partner up with them on this project. Now back to the show.
Tell me why you think you chose. Good to have you here on Three and Out all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. Kevin, BJ, and Ben, glad you were with us here on this Tuesday. Plenty to get to. We'll talk about Kirby Smart, made some comments about what is Georgia's best way to play at their peak performance level. We'll get some of those comments coming up a little bit later on the show as well. Breakdown, it could just be another great running back crop in the SEC as well. But it is 4 o'clock, fellas. Let's take three here on Three and Out. Take one. Have you ever felt, especially I think on this show, closer to an SEC coach than watching Lane Kiffin struggle with math on Twitter? Obviously, after being fined $25,000 by the SEC for criticizing officials, he took to Twitter and asked, "Hey, where can I get 25,000 pennies?" Which obviously doesn't get you to $25,000. He then followed up and goes, "Nope, 250,000 pennies." Nope, that still doesn't get you there either. And then finally said, 2.5 million pennies, and I could pay the fine in pennies. Boy, he fits right in on this show when it comes to math, doesn't he not?
Oh, yeah, the first rule anytime someone's about to go on Three and Out is we say, do not try to do math. Like if a situation arises and you're going, oh, yeah, that year he had 57 receptions. The next year he had like 24 receptions. Do not try to add it. Do not, because only something bad will happen. But I have a theory. I think Lane Kiffin did this on purpose. Because, Ben, you played for him. You would know better than me. But Lane Kiffin has signed some pretty nice contracts throughout his career. He knows how to count that money. He knows about the money. Now, what is Lane Kiffin? Always in the news. Always talked about. Sometimes it's a funny Twitter post. Sometimes it's a jab at a rival in a press conference. But people are always talking about him. I think the fact that, you know, the 25,000 pennies thing, that's not a good take. I mean, I think Lane Kiffin knows, even if you made a simple mistake, that's not $25,000. But then to immediately try to self-correct and then make a mistake again and then have to correct a third time, he took over the internet for a night. And keep in mind, what was everybody talking about with his team? Oh, a devastating, heartbreaking loss. They got, you know, the short end of the stick, terrible. Now everybody's joking about their head coach and laughing and smiling and having a good time. Lane Kiffin's smart. I think he did this on purpose. And if he can't count, he's just like everybody else in the world. But I think Lane Kiffin did this on purpose, Ben, to take over Twitter, change the talking point after a loss, and just have a fun, good time with all this.
Absolutely. And I'm happy he finally got back to being himself. Don't nobody want Lane Kiffin to be politically direct, you know, answering questions like, yeah. I want the Lane Kiffin that said, you know, if I was playing wide receiver right now and Nick Saban's at DB, I would smoke him. I mean, I want the Lane Kiffin that says, yeah, man, well, anybody got 25,000 pennies? I'm sorry, 250,000 pennies. Because this is what we know and love. This is the Lane Kiffin that we know and love, BJ. I don't want the intervention Lane Kiffin. Hey, man, I've turned over a different leaf. I don't really do it. No. Go out there and, you know, ruffle some feathers. I mean, yes, BJ, I stay away from the counting too. I mean, at the end of the day, somebody would say, yeah. I mean, the fact that he's willing to give that many pennies to pay for it, he got some pennies in him, but I love it. I love the Lane Kiffin that's unpredictable. I love the Lane Kiffin that gives great post-game press conferences. Not this new guy. I mean, when Lane Kiffin first went, you know, to FAU, man, I mean, he was kind of showing some, you know, some moxie, and then all of a sudden started losing, and then he stopped doing it. You're back in the SEC, one, to troll Alabama, two, to beat Mississippi State, and three, to give us, you know, that, you know, kind of like some of that Steve Spurrier type sound bites, BJ, and that's what he just did. I don't want the Lane Kiffin, you make too much money, you know, to not go out there and have fun. I mean, my goodness, you got the coach Ole Miss, you better find a way to smile right now, because you're going to have much smile at later on. But yes, I love it, Kevin. Because when you said 25,000, and I'm thinking to myself, 25,000. It was like one time somebody was like, I can't remember who the rich guy was, Mike Bloomberg in New York. Somebody go, listen, he could have gave, if only, it's only 370 million Americans, he could have gave every American $1 million. Somebody was like, no, I don't think it go like that. But I appreciate the effort. But yes, Kevin, Lane Kiffin, getting back to himself, and I want to be there because that's a lot of them little penny rolls. That's a lot. I want to be there when he send that in.
Yeah, that's and that is like the ultimate. Whenever you're just really mad at somebody and you like have to pay up a fine, or he's like, "Hey, here you go," and it's all pennies. You count them. I may be off one or two. Take two. Florida's blue helmets, Ben, for Saturday. Love them or hate them. I'll say this: if folks haven't seen them, Florida's going with a blue helmet. It's got a white, what, like a white circle, and the F is in the middle of that. So a little different.
You know what? I love them because BJ gonna hate them. I love it. I love the fact that BJ gonna look at it and go, first BJ wanna talk trash. Oh my God, they got the orange and they got the crazy looking colors. No, I like the fact that when BJ saw it, BJ said two things. Oh God. Yes, yes, yes. If I had to deal with the green scaling looking ones or whatever, hey, I can go with them all blue. They gonna have all, I like it. I like the fact that they did a nice little rollout for it or whatever. I like the fact that, I'm saying I like it. I didn't say I loved it. I'm in the middle. You know what I'm saying? I like it. I like the fact they're trying to do a little something. They ain't seen them in a while. But I will tell you this. when they wore those green scaling ones, the Playtex A&M got beat. They better find a way to win this game. If they don't, Gator Equipment, still send your boy one of them ones y'all just made with the blue. But if they don't win, we ain't going to see those no more. But for right now, because BJ's going to hate it, I love it. Love it, love it.
Is the F on the helmet? Is it a grade? Is it a what is it?
What?
The F, A B C D F, like a grade. Like remember when we went to school and we got grades? Like an F.
No, I think they're gonna spell out like F. Listen, all I'm saying is I love it, BJ. BJ, you don't like the blue? You talking?
No, I will say this. No, it's fine. I like the ones that I like the white helmet with the F on it. I think it pop. Yeah. What I do like though is I like old school logos and the little gator puffing his chest out with the sweater on.
Oh, yeah, the one that been lifting. Yeah, he been lifting.
Yeah. Yeah, he's nice. Is that Albert also?
That's Albert Albert. No. That's Alvin. That's Albert
Albert. That's the dad?
That's Albert.
Okay, well, that logo's cool. I think that would be kind of cool on a helmet, but that logo's been making the rounds. I like that one for the Gators.
Oh, whoa. You giving the Gators some love? Are you changing? Yeah. Your family, bunch of Gators, right? A lot of people in your family.
Well, I mean, I have people in my family who've gone to various universities rooting for.
No. Like your grandfather, like my
grandfather went to Michigan State and Mercer.
What about you?
Oh, and Georgia Tech.
Nobody in your family went to Florida.
I have an uncle that went to Florida.
You got a grandmother. You had a grandmother.
Also got an uncle that went to jail too. I mean,
so now somebody went to jail. You know what?
I'm just saying. I got a lot of uncles and aunts and cousins. I got a lot of people that have done a lot of different stuff. I'm just saying.
We trying to be complimented. I got a family member that went to jail. Well, so do I. My goodness.
I'm just saying.
Your mom's mom. She went to Florida.
She was a Gator. She was a Gator.
It wasn't just her. I'm just saying, like ones that you know, like was work for like a NASA and all that.
Yeah, that was my grandpa. Who went to Georgia Tech. He was gonna. He wanted to be an engineer.
Family lineages here. Who's going to jail?
I'm just saying. I mean, Kevin. I mean, my goodness, I got a family member that went to jail.
All that stemming from. Do you like a blue helmet? I mean that.
Listen, at least
that's how the show goes sometimes.
Stuff.
That's how the show goes sometimes. Blue helmet. Oh yeah, why? And went to jail. Never know how it's going to go off the rails. Moving along quickly. Take three. Following College Game Day at Augusta National. If Tiger is in contention in the third round of the Masters, you got Georgia playing, and they need a tight game against Mizzou. How do you survive, golf fans and Georgia fans in the state with what's going on there? Tiger winning, Georgia tight game. Which one are you focusing on that Saturday?
If you're a Georgia Bulldog fan?
If you're a Georgia Bulldog, but Tiger is a huge, huge draw. He's winning the Masters. Georgia's playing at the same time.
Yeah, but he's done that a lot. Georgia hadn't won a whole lot of big things. So you got to go. You got to go with the thing. I mean, what? You don't like that?
This is spinning rapidly out of control.
I like it. It's true. I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, you know, Tiger's got a chance to win that thing. And
but I mean, how many majors has Tiger won, Kevin?
17?
Yeah, he's won like 17, 18 majors. I mean,
BJ, are we doing this Georgia, again?
Are we doing, I'm asking the question.
Are we doing the Tiger disrespect again?
No. Kevin said if you're a Georgia fan and a Tiger fan,
yeah,
and Tiger's in contention on Saturday and Georgia's in a tight spot, which are you watching? I'm saying the Georgia game because you've seen Tiger win big tournaments, big games all the time. You know, Georgia's still looking for that first national title since before Ben was born. So you've seen Tiger do it a bunch.
Well, this wasn't the question number one because Kevin, yeah, Kevin didn't ask the correct question.
I know. I tried to mess it up.
Yeah, Kevin didn't even ask the correct question. But
you weren't in here, so I was like, well, it's like.
The answer is you do the dual screen technology, all right? And you just let your brain.
That wasn't in the notes.
You let your brain become a chameleon where you have the smaller TV on one, you have the big TV on the other, and you just have eyes going two different ways. And you're tracking it. But luckily, I think that'll probably be a night game because it's at Mizzou. They'll put that one on like ESPN 7 because, you know, Mizzou ain't hot right now. So
they just won a game.
Against Kentucky. All
right. I mean, the thing about it is this. I mean, Christian did
invest
call.
Invest in the new screen. It's not that expensive anymore.
Okay. Well, who's on the big screen there? You said you got two screens, Christian. Who get the big screen?
And
who
Tiger's
get the
still
screen?
On the Masters.
Just saying, I mean, superstitious over there.
It's Tiger.
I mean, and why is it every time
and
we say
and if Georgia's
Tiger,
playing a close game with Missouri, why do I want to put myself through that? That game shouldn't be close. They don't deserve my attention at that point.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, though, like why every time we can't be critical of Tiger? Is Tiger, like, beyond analytics that we can't say nothing?
Yes, Tiger Woods, much like Tom Brady, is one of, like, three people on Earth that are beyond analytics, the third being Kevin. When he's running a 37-yard dash.
Okay. Kevin did look nice. I mean, let me tell you something. That boy was modeling them tube top. I mean, all you heard was dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Nope, for aerodynamics, Ben.
But we do have a controversy, though, that you guys will appreciate. I know y'all haven't been in the office in a while, but Kevin's wife, lovely wife, Amy, she said that if she could, she would burn all the tube socks. She hates them.
Really? You got that many, Kevin?
I'm not here to please, so I'm here to do what I want to. That's take three. We do it every day at this time. We'll come back. More to come here on a 3 and Out all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network.
BJ, Ben, and Kevin. BJ, Ben, and Kevin. The 3 and Out podcast on ESPN Coastal.
.com. 80 and a 65. I got places to be. To see. I'm rushing through life, but I got reason to be. This life don't wait for nobody, not even me. So I'ma keep going to heaven's king. Call me to leave. Yeah, this the life.
It's welcome the back, 3 and Out here on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. Kevin, BJ, and Ben. Glad you're with us on this Tuesday, all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network, ESPNCoastal.com. We're live streaming on Facebook and Twitter as well. Kirby Smart said that Georgia's number one focus is, quote, we have to play our brand of football. Well, Ben, you played football. What is the Georgia brand of football exactly? When you say a statement like that, what does that mean to you when you hear Kirby say that?
Well, it sounds like Kirby's tired of the fluff. I mean, I know that Kirby, people are saying that Kirby did a good job of adjusting to the times when you talk about the fact that everybody wants to add that nuance of the open, you know, wide open passing game. But I think what Kirby Smart is saying is, look, we don't play like tantalizing. Oh, look at this wide open offense. We play boring offense. We want to get a fullback in the eye, run downhill, and get back to the play action. Now I know people are saying, well, wait a minute, man, I haven't seen Kirby Smart do that. Well, this is the thing. The reason why, I mean, think about the statement he said. We don't want to get into a back and forth. We want to get back to what we do. That's talking to the fans and that's talking to Coach Monk and saying, look, I know that we got George Pickens, Kyaris Jackson, those guys. But the thing about it is Florida runs the football. That's what they do. We don't have a Tua on our offense or a Mac Jones to be able to throw it. I know we got the mailman, you know, Stetson Bennett. But the thing about it is, BJ, this goes back to when Mark Richt was at Georgia. When Georgia's at their best, they got a fullback. They got the back. They in the I formation. They run the ball downhill. They're getting three yards in a cloud of dust. And just when they get them linebackers to step up, they go to the play action. The reason why I say that's what Kirby Smart is saying is this. Kirby Smart is saying, if I'm going to lose, I am going to lose the way I play football, not this new way. Because the whole thing about it is, whenever Georgia has to go back and forth, that usually goes into, that usually goes against them. Whenever Georgia makes you play their style of football, that usually bodes well for them. It's not cute. You ain't turn. You ain't listen. You watching Georgia to watch quality, not the 2020. You know everybody's doing the spread. I know that. I know that Stetson Bennett is a guy that can do it. But when you look at a Georgia game, when you start saying they got the three-headed monster running back, they ain't got as good of an offensive line this year. But the whole thing about it is, when you think of certain teams, you think of a brand of football. With Georgia right now on offense, you really don't know what to do. And the people say, well, the running game isn't as good because the focus isn't there. The focus is, we got George Pickens, we got Kiers. Let's get the passing game going to be able to let people know that I can adjust. Well, change isn't always good. You know, change. People think, well, you got to adjust to make things go your way. No, I think that Kirby Smart is looking down the road and saying, I'm gonna have a better chance of controlling the type of games we play with a hard nosed running game, smash mouth running game, and that way Stetson Bennett don't got to sit there and throw the ball. It's only been two Georgia quarterbacks the last 4 years. You know, Jake Fromm and Stetson Bennett. Every time they have to throw the ball more than 25 times, that usually results in an L. And what Kirby Smart is saying is, I don't want to have to win throwing the football. I want to play my style of football, a fullback, in our formation, or at least running the football consistently to open up for the passing game. Because, BJ, you know, just like I know, just because you got a guy that can throw the football doesn't mean that's going to help you win games. And I think it's only going to protect Stetson Bennett if he's going to remain your starter.
Agreed. And I do think still the dominant teams in college football run the football. Matt Jones is doing – silly things statistically at Alabama, but they also have the national leader in rushing touchdowns by a wide margin in Najee Harris with 14. Trevor's putting up incredible numbers at Clemson, but who else is in the offensive backfield with Mr. Lawrence? That is Travis Etienne, who by the time it's all said and done, it may take a couple of years, but people are going to finally appreciate him as one of the five best running backs in college football history. Who else runs the football every single year? Ohio State. Justin Fields is a part of that sometimes, by the way, but Justin Fields is doing great work for the Buckeyes, but they're still physical at the point of attack. And go back to Ohio State's most recent national championship. They lost one quarterback, didn't matter. They lost two quarterbacks, didn't matter. Starting a guy that's never played in the college football playoff, didn't matter. Why? Ezekiel Elliott. And I still want to see Georgia get back to not only giving the ball to Zamir White and James Cook, but featuring them. And you guys know how I feel about Stetson Bennett. I think he's a really good quarterback. He's been playing well. Had a hiccup in the second half against Alabama. I get it. Yeah, people wanted to see more proficiency. But I think everything ties together. I think Georgia threw the ball, Stetson threw the ball like 40, 41, 42 times against Alabama. Everything is interrelated on a football field. And when I see Georgia give up almost 600 yards of total offense to Alabama, my first thought is, were you running the football and dictating the tempo and the ebb and flow of the game? Part of what has made Georgia so successful under Kirby Smart is that the offense and defense work together. You line up with Nick Chubb and Sony Michel and DeAndre Swift, and you're running the ball and you're limiting the offensive opportunities for your opponent so that when they get on the field, they feel frazzled and stressed and rushed. My God, we got to do something because if not, we're not going to get the ball back for 6-7 minutes. Your defense knows that, and they can maximize on that one-dimensionality, and they can also play with more energy and play more fresh because they are dictating tempo, not the other way around with these spread kind of 90-snap-a-game offenses. So, yeah, look, man, there was anytime you have a new offensive coordinator, new quarterback, injuries, all kind of stuff, opt-outs, there's going to be a transition period. I get all that. But I think now that the dust is kind of settled and you're getting ready for Jacksonville here in a couple of weeks, you got to line up and run that thing, man. And when I think run that thing, I mean, Zamir White gets 20 carries, James Cook gets 15 carries, Kenny McIntosh gets 10 carries, and you throw the ball effectively and efficiently. But Ben, man, when I think Georgia football, I know you played against some of these guys, but it's David Green doing that slow, long play action,
yeah,
holding that ball back there and kind of freezing it. I think about Rodney Hampton and, you know, Garrison Hurst and Patrick Pass and Olandis Gary and Musa Smith and Chubb and Michelle and Todd Gurley and you know, Thomas Brown. I mean, I think about all these guys, Tyson Brown. You're lining up, you're running the football, man. No Sean Marino jumping over people. Like, I think Georgia's got to get back to that being the foundational aspect. And that doesn't mean you don't have high expectations for your quarterback. I mean, whether it's Stetson Bennett, JT Daniels, one of the young guys, you know, Mathis, Beck, whatever, you still got to run the football, Kevin.
Well, I mean, and what you're really saying is I think you can do the new era stuff with Todd Monken and things like that. But as you said, the identity of your team is what? Physicality. And sometimes you see the Pac-12 and the Big 12 teams, it's more, hey, we're running the spread, but we want to get in space and just let our guys do what they do. And there's not a lot of moving guys around. Where you look at Georgia, to me, and maybe this is the mindset Kirby's talking about, when you show up and you say, Georgia, they're at their best when they show up and punch you in the face. You know, it's like, why were they so good the last several years? It's because their offensive line just ate people. They went up there and said, hey, we're going to move you, and if you don't want to be moved, we're going to make you move. And I think that's been the key. And I think when you go to sometimes with the air raid style or the new kind of read option stuff, you lose a little bit of that because it's about making a read and getting in space and not as much, we're just going to move people out of the way through brute force. And to me, that's the identity that if I'm a Georgia fan, I want to see. It's physical on the offensive line, physical on the defensive line. We're going to hit you on defense. We're going to make you pay. And on offense, we're going to move you where we want to move you, and it's up to you to make us not do that, and we don't think you can. So I think playing in space is fun at times, but, you know, if you have a bunch of guys that are big and physical, why would you want to make them run around and play in space? Just say, move them out of the way and let's make our own space to play in and do that. And I think to me, that's the, I mean, Alabama does it obviously BJ better than anybody. They're one of the few that haven't gone to a pure, hey, we're shotgun, we're reading, we're doing, no, they're running their offense. They're just physically beating people week in and week out.
Well, and Ben, I mean, even with Florida, you know, there are so many different ways to run the football. When Florida won, you know, their national championships with Urban Meyer, yeah, everybody knew what the Gators were all about, and that's let Tim Tebow make plays. But as the NFL showed, he was a better runner than he was a thrower. And even with Chris Leak, you're talking about lining up, you know, Percy Harvin. You know, you got all kind of guys running the football. I just think you've got to find a way to do that because the ripple effect, it makes everybody better, and it lets you control the game.
It lets you control the narrative too. I mean, the thing about it is this. I mean, most, you know, I compare football to boxing. You know, you got all these guys now. You know, they want to show their endurance. They want to stick and move. And then you get a guy like a Mike Tyson type. I'm a brawler. I want to go out there and say, listen, everybody got a plan until you get hit. Georgia plays their best when they say, listen, we're gonna crowd everybody in this booth. Unless my corners and safeties and receivers, y'all out there, you know, to deal with those guys, we're gonna put everybody in this booth. But let's see. We're gonna run downhill left, downhill right, trap left, trap right. And the whole thing about it is, I mean, BJ, it's like this, and I'm just using this as a barometer. You go back to the Florida State Notre Dame game, right? They were running one play, the counter, and Florida State could not adjust. Not only were they running it, they was running it the same way. I'm not going to go left if they can't stop it on the right side. The thing about Georgia is, you know, you watch Georgia game, you're saying, dude, they running the ball. It looks so easy to stop. But when those offensive linemen get to leaning on people, and just when they get tired of them, all right, they're leaning on them, bombs over Baghdad, touchdown. So, to me, I think what Kirby Smart is saying, look, man, let's not confuse this thing. We don't recruit 350-pound guys so they can backpedal. No, we got those guys to go forward. And Kevin, like I said, before Coach Collins got to Georgia Tech, you know what you're getting on offense. I don't care who you are and what you are. The thing about it is that goes a long way because not only do you know the people you're recruiting know. Now you go to Georgia, it's, hey man, are y'all throwing the ball or running the ball? Well, it just depends on who we playing. No, it didn't matter. Your best team that I've seen in my lifetime in Georgia, you know, it was 3 years ago. Y'all ran the ball with three guys. Y'all threw the ball when you had to. No, Jake Fromm didn't have these out of this world numbers. And if Tua don't come in the second half, y'all winning that. I'm saying go back to what works. Make your team understand because winning is the cologne that cures all stink. Because if you ain't winning, it don't matter. I'm just saying. Is it?
We've got so much more to get to here on Three and Out all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. EJ Jr., former Alabama linebacker, will join us coming up top of the final hour of the program. He's a guy that knew how to play physical. Certainly there on the defensive side, going to go into the College Football Hall of Fame on December 8th. We'll talk to him. Our Southern Power Pole coming up the final hour of the show as well. It's Three and Out all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network.
ESPNCoastal.com. The Three and Out Podcast with BJ, Ben, and Kevin.
Falling apart because I miss you. I miss you. Baby, I miss you. I miss you. I get mad when he's not at home. He's working. I know that I need him. And it's time he knows.
Good to have you along here on Three and Out all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. Kevin, BJ, and Ben, glad to you're making us a part of your day as we get the final hour here on this Tuesday, and a lot to get to. We'll hit our Southern Power Poll for the Southern College football's teams here coming up in just a little bit. But joining us here on the program, recently selected, soon to be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame, former Alabama linebacker, first-round pick out of Alabama in the 81 draft by the St. Louis Cardinals. EJ Jr. joins us here on Three and Out. EJ, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine, gentlemen. How you doing today?
Hey, we are doing fantastic. I know coming up in December, you're going to be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. What was that like, though, when you first got the notice that, hey, it's happening, we're going to put you in as one of the best to ever do it in college football?
I was very shocked and surprised. I mean, it's been a long time coming. I've been a nominee for the last 5 years. And it got to a point where I really stopped thinking about it. But the way I found out was probably the most unusual way that you could even imagine, because I was at home. There was a package delivered on my front door. And I'm like, okay. My son is also named EJ. So you got EJ Jr. the third and EJ Jr. the fourth. But it just said EJ Jr. So I'm like, oh, my son ordered something from Amazon. It's on the front door. So when he comes home, I says, well, did you order something from Amazon? He says, no. He said, well, open it and see. So I open it, and I'm seeing this football. And it says, you know, congratulations, EJ Jr. You know, I didn't even read the whole thing. I just said, congratulations, EJ Jr. The football looks beautiful. And then I looked at the date. It said December the 8th, 2020. And I'm like, December the 8th, 2020? December the 8th, 2020 hadn't even gotten here yet. So I'm kind of befuddled. And then I went back and looked at the letter that was in the bottom of it. It says, you've been inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. I'm like, oh, my goodness. So that's how I found out. And what the irony of it is, it's on my birthday. So that was even more of pleasing and more surprising.
Wow. Congratulations. Reflect for us, if you can, EJ, on what made you so successful? I mean, such an incredible career, collegiately, professionally. When you look back on it, what do you attribute your success to?
Oh, there's so many things that contributed to my success. You know, my parents, you know, both are educators. My dad, God rest his soul, was a hard-working man, actually from the southern part of Georgia. He was from Waycross. Was born in Claxton. My grandfather was a church pastor as well as a principal of a high school. So a lot of the work ethic came from that side of the family, as well as the academics that came from my mother's side. She was an athlete in high school for a period of time. And as I got older, I had great coaches. When I think of great coaches, my high school coaches, you know, Wes Elrod, Bill Grammer, Gerald Johnson and Maplewood High School. And then I get to college and I got Sylvester Croom, Ken Donahue, Paul Crane, those type of coaches, the administration in Alabama, the cafeteria workers, everybody was basically teaching perfection. You know, always do the best, give everything you got. And, you know, the professors I had at Alabama, Jeff Rouse, I didn't mean to leave out Coach Rousey, who was our linebacker coach at the time, all contributed to my success. But I would say, when you got a coach like Coach Bear Bryant, when he called and said, I'm going to promise you two things when you come to Alabama. And I said, what is that, coach? He says, first, guarantee you that you'll get a quality education. I thought to myself, I can get that from anywhere. But then he said, you come to Alabama, I'm going to work your tail off. That helped my quickening. All-American, either promised I would play or even start if I came to Alabama. He just said that I was going to work my tail off. And that was a work ethic that he instilled in me from another level, from high school. So, I mean, then to go to the pros, actually playing in the pros was easier than playing in college. The college ethic that Coach Bryan and Sylvester Croom and those guys instilled in me just carried over to the pros.
And EJ, I mean, the thing about Alabama and the linebacker tradition, I mean, people like yourself, and then you look at it, and you look at the fact that even over the years, I mean, something you just said is something that current Alabama guys be saying about the pros is, man, the pros is easy when you're talking about the standard. People always talk about that word standard. What does the standard to you mean, you know, being a guy that played at arguably, you know, the premier college from even when you was playing to this current day?
You know, the one thing that that they all have a consistency started with my dad, and then Coach Bryant reemphasized that do the little things. And it could be just as simple as picking up a piece of paper walking on your campus. It could be how you make up your bed. Do you just throw it together, or do you make it up a certain way that looks like a military-type phone? You know, and when you think about it, to study film, what are you looking for? How are you studying it? You know, how do you beat that guy? Cause I don't think I was the most talented. I came there as a blue chipper, but then you had guys like Barry Krause, Rich Wingo, Dewey Mitchell, Randy Scott, who they brought in from Georgia that year, playing in Alabama. We were talking about guys who were already All-Americans. I'm like, all I want to do is be able to compete. And you try to do your best, so what made me better than them? And I would say I just basically fit in a system that made me look good, because those guys did their jobs and they were great players as well. But it's just still doing the little things. Sylvester Croom, who went into the Alabama Sports Hall of Fame this year, said I was probably the most technically sound defensive lineman in that he's ever coached. That's because I paid attention to the details that he taught me. He was an All-American center coaching the linebacker. And it just came together. It was a great chemistry. It was a great a methodology. And in the end, it's gotten me to where I am today.
EJ Jr. joining us here on 3 and Out. And you look at your time at Alabama, and it seems like over the years, not much has changed. Great players there during your time. Alabama, great players now. They lose a guy like Jaylen Waddle on the first play of a game and don't seemingly miss a beat. Why is that? I mean, I know it's easy to say Bear Bryant and Nick Saban, but is there more to it than that?
I believe the same philosophy that Coach Saban has is the same that Coach Bryant had back when I was playing. Coach Bryant once said to us, he says, I can take mine and beat yours, and I can take yours and beat mine. And he meant it, because of a game back in my junior or my senior year. We played Wichita State. Now, Wichita State is not a football power, but he actually started the second-team offense and a second-team defense. And that group of guys scored 14 points. We had them in a shutout, and they hadn't crossed the 50. By the time we're talking about going into the second quarter. And we're all the starters on the sideline saying, wait a minute, I need to get my playing time. I want to make training tape. And our second team was just as good as our first team. And it painted a picture. Coach Bryant could start anybody, whoever he wanted, whenever he wanted, and they were just as good as you. And that was such a mark in my mind over the years. I'm like, wow, we were that good because we had guys who could come in and replace us at any time, and they wouldn't miss a beat. And you just wanted to compete to be the best player on that field. So I had guys who pushed me, like Mike Pitts, who became an All-American after I left. You know, Gary Vendero from Gary, Indiana, and John Morrow, who played from South Bend. So you got a guy from Nashville, Tennessee, could have gone to Vanderbilt, and got another guy from who could have gone to Notre Dame, both playing at Alabama, and we were all pretty good. So I didn't want to be a backup to anybody, but also knew that those guys who were behind me were just as good as I was.
Alabama, of course, historically known for elite defenses, and they still have a good defense now, but these offenses with Mac Jones and Tua Tagovailoa, I mean, what do you see now when you watch these offenses for Alabama and the 40, 50 points they're seemingly putting up every week?
Well, the most interesting, I'm a defensive coach. I coach high school and college. I'm a college defensive guy. But it's hard to stop these offenses. They're making the rules more geared towards offenses. So it's very hard to even call what you have a shutdown defense because there's so many things that the offenses can do, motions, speed option, RPOs that basically put defenses in a bind. But it's great to see that Coach Saban has adjusted over the years, once we started losing to Clemson, which I call Alabama East, because Dabo is Alabama graduate and he coached at Alabama, so all he did was Alabama and he took it to Clemson. But those styles of offenses where now you got the score point. Everybody knows you can shut down people. Well, now how do you exploit those defenses who know how to shut you down? And Alabama got a good taste of it the other day, playing a good Ole Miss team now. They look kind of bad, but there's some things that Alabama has to improve on, setting the edge and tackling. But, I know Coach Saban and that defensive staff will get that straight. But in this day and age, it'd be very rare if you saw a team shut out another team.
And, EJ, I mean, even getting back to what you said as far as, like, how you found out, that you was a College Football Hall of Famer. I mean, the thing about it is, John Gruden said it, obviously the head coach now of the Las Vegas Raiders. He said, when you're a Hall of Famer, that means you're the greatest of all time. That means that it doesn't matter how people feel about you, whether they thought you was good, bad, okay. That means you live on forever. What does that feel like? Because at the end of the day, while I know that the NFL might be the hardest, Hall of Fame to get in, I don't think that prestige loses any type of, level of, at the highest level when you talk about the fact that you are enshrined as one of the greatest college football players to ever grace a football field.
That is so humbling. I almost really, to this day, I still don't really know how to handle that because I played with, there were so many great guys who played at Alabama with me. Marty Lyons, who I believe is in the College Football Hall of Fame, Don McNeil, played with Major Oglesby, Byron Bragg, David Hanna, Rich Wingo, Barry Krause. Which are my guys who are all Americans who were good. I just happened to be in the right place at the right time to make plays. And really, this award is not mine by itself. It belongs to those four teams of Alabama from 77 to 80 that I played with. Because when you think, I played with Ozzie Newsome. I played with Johnny Davis. I played with Jeff Butler. Man, we had some great athletes. We should have won four straight national championships. We got ripped off my freshman year. When they jumped Notre Dame from fifth to first. And then my senior year, we actually lost two games and lost to a good Notre Dame team, which played Herschel Walker and company in the Sugar Bowl. And we lost to Mississippi State 6-3 in Starkville. But I look at those guys, and I'm like, any one of those guys could easily be in the College Football Hall of Fame. I'm just glad that I'm a piece of the puzzle with a great group of guys who made me look good every Saturday.
EJ Jr., former Alabama linebacker, going to be inducted December 8th, 2022, to the College Football Hall of Fame. Also, your birthday there, EJ. We know it's going to be a special day, special night. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good day and be blessed.
Will do. EJ Jr., our guest here on 3-and-Out. Great player. As he said, he started going down some of the guys that played Alabama. Sounds a lot like today's Alabama, where you start going, I had this guy and this guy and this guy. Well, yeah. That's why Alabama is so special. They got great talent everywhere.
Yeah, Ben, such an incredible interview, and I saw you nodding your head on the video stream to just about everything he said and some of the stuff I've heard you talk about. You're a Florida Georgia Hall of Famer, and you said, look, I had to earn it. It's not just showing up and being talented. It's the little things. And EJ Jr. talking about, did I pick up a piece of trash on campus? How did I make my bed? How did I handle maybe not starting? That was really incredible insight from a college football legend.
Well, listen, the one thing EJ can let you know is how you do anything is how you do everything. I mean, the story that he's saying kind of reminds me of what the greatest safety that I've ever had the pleasure of playing against and watching play Ed Reed said. They would always ask him about, how well he plays. He said, what I pride myself in? Away games, making sure that locker room was clean. We made sure that the way it looked when we came in is how it looked when we walked out. Now, you would think that a guy like EJ would say the X and O's. You know what I like about when guys go into the Hall of Fame? they get to mention about all the guys they play with. And that's a football player mentality. Like, yeah, man. They always say, I made some plays. Man, I played with this guy and that guy. And I think that's what make a great football player is being a great teammate. And every time we ask EJ about him, he said, I played with Ozzie Newsome. Ozzie Newsome most people know Ozzie Newsome being the greatest, one of the greatest, orchestrators of what the Baltimore Ravens are doing now. Or Ozzie Newsome, he drafted Jonathan Ogden and freaking Ray Lewis. His last draft, he drafted. So I just think that I'm happy for EJ. And like you said, Kevin, number one, two things about football players. We never ever think we're good as people say we are. And we always think people playing a joke. He said, did you order some of EJ? What, Daddy EJ? Did you order some from Amazon? No. Let me look back in this box. And it's on his birthday. Let me tell you something.
I mean, Ben, when he was talking to his son, was he literally talking to EJ Jr. Jr.?
I mean, we always talk about – listen.
That's what I'm saying.
He was the fourth.
They got an EJ Jr. Jr.
His
Jr.
dad was EJ Jr. Jr.
So basically what EJ told us is that not only is it an EJ Jr. Jr., you got triple and double chocolate. You got to have it, right?
We've got more to come here on 3 and Out. We'll get to our Southern Power Pool next, all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network.